Hey, Ricky, I'm glad you sent me this kind of outline thing. I think this is kind of a natural progression of things, and it reminds me of things that I probably should tell you that I wouldn't otherwise. So, anyway, we'll continue on here, because I made a little stop to get a drink of water. And I'll talk about the house on Marlboro, on Terrace Street in Marlboro a little bit. Yeah, there was a barn, and I don't know when this house was built, but we moved into it in 1923. I understood I was a year old when we moved in after the house burned down just east of the farm up on the Dublin Road. It was originally built for horses, but the stalls were ripped out and we could park three cars in there. And it was a driveway you had to run up beside the house, and then that was banked up on a granite wall, and then we had a driveway down below where you could drive all the way around the house, where we brought in wood and stuff like that. But we didn't really have any animals. Occasionally we'd have a pig out in the back in the pen, and we did have a few chickens to begin with down underneath the house for a while, but not very many animals. We had a renter in one part of the house. You remember that house? That was a big house, Ricky. That had 12 rooms in it, and those rooms were damn near 20 by 20. Those they built big rooms back in those days, and it was it had a big hallway down the middle with six rooms on one side and six rooms on the other side. But of course, three of them on each side were bedrooms upstairs. And it had this big double hallway and double doors at the front end. The front door, I remember, had lock holes in it, but I can't ever remember having any keys, and I can't ever remember locking the door either. For that matter, we did most of our business on the side door that went into the kitchen. And of course, the kitchen was in the back near the barn, and then the dining room was in the middle, and the living room was in the front, and had a big porch that went all along the front and all along the, I guess you'd call it the south side of the house. Great big old windows, and had a stairway up into the second floor, and big hallway up there with banisters up along the stairway and everything. And not until we lived there till Second World War did we have a bathroom in the house. We had an outhouse, which actually wasn't out. It was inside. And there was a alleyway out along the horse barn, and out there was a two-hole outhouse where the waste all went down, even where the horse manure went down underneath the house, where all the human waste went down there too. And then the fact of the matter was, it was a two-story outhouse, because you could walk out of the upstairs bedrooms, at least the ones in the back of the house, and walk through another alleyway, and there was another two-holer up above there that went down to the same place. So we went to an outhouse, but it wasn't really out. And you know, you get up in the middle of the winter and you got to go to the bathroom and you have to go to an outhouse. You got to put some boots on or something, but this was a heck of a lot better than that. You didn't have to go out and walk in the snow, that's for sure. But this was a huge house. And then on the second story, there was a what we called an attic up there, which is bigger than the house that I live in right now. And these were big houses, and I think my dad told me he bought that house for $1,200 in 1923. And this was a 12-room house, and we used half of it, and we rented the other half out. And I think my dad told me for five or six rooms he got $6 a month for rent. We had a vegetable garden. I can't ever remember, as your mother said, that we had a cow. I never remember having a cow there. But we did have a big garden, and in the backyard there was actually two gardens, and they were terraced. And on that terrace part were two or three pear trees. And we had the that lower garden down there was as much as 20, 25 feet wide and maybe 100 feet long, all garden. And we had everything, beans, corn, squash, cucumbers, tomatoes, everything growing in that garden. I can remember Brussels sprouts and cabbage and all kinds of stuff. And I had a room that I shared at first with my older brother and then with your dad Frank, or your uncle Frank. And you wouldn't exactly call the house a duplex. It wasn't meant that way. It was meant for a family house. It was just 12 rooms big. And you remember that back in those days, sometimes you had what we call extended families. You had the parents and the children and the grandparents and everybody living in the same house. So they built them awful big, but it was never meant to be a duplex. It was meant to be a single or family home, you know. But you might have two or three extended families in there. But it was fun. We were next to the top of the hill on Terrace Street, and then out past the garden, my dad owned some pasture land. It had some woodland on it, some pasture land, had a little creek running through it. We used to go over there and dam that creek up, and the other side of the property went clear over onto Water Street, which was... Oh, I don't know. I would guess that pasture was, probably 20, 30 acres or more. And we had a lot of fun running around the pasture. And Uncle Frank, now, you know, he lives right top of the hill in that old pasture there. He bought part of that property back after my dad had sold it. The pasture property, and he's built a house right up on top, and it was quite a nice place to live. We enjoyed it there, but being at the top of the hill and having asthma, and especially when I was riding a bicycle, you had to push that damn bicycle up the hill, which was no fun, but it was a lot of fun going back down. And but 4th of July was a big holiday, we began getting nickels and dimes out of Grandma and Grandpa and Mother and Pa and buying firecrackers almost 2-3 weeks before the 4th of July. We'd have everything shot off, and that was quite a big holiday for us, but I think 4th of July was the biggest holiday. And they had a lot more holidays than they did then. They celebrated Veterans Day or Memorial Day, where we honored the veterans on May 30th, and we had Armistice Day, which was November 11th, and they had parades and everything on these days. And they have some holidays back then that we don't even have now. But... let's see. Grandpa George Robinson. I told you a little bit about him and the milk run, and Grandma Wiswell, I remember, was a real shrewd Irish woman, little bitty girl, but boy, she knew her way around in the business world. Grandpa Frank Wiswell he made some money in the wood business. That's where we got all these wood lots from, was given to us from Grandpa Frank T. Wiswell, and so they had a little money. And Grandma Wiswell, Maggie as they called us, she was the brains of the family, and she would talk to some people in town that knew something about investing, and she had some pretty damn good investments. Her money didn't just sit in the mattress. She had some pretty good investments, I'm pretty sure. And she visited with a guy in town that knew a little bit about stocks and bonds and all this stuff, and she invested. She even wrote her own will, and I still have a copy of it. But she hand wrote it and had it witnessed by two or three people, and my Aunt Gladys, there was only two girls in that family, my mother and Aunt Gladys, and Aunt Gladys didn't like the cut that was being given to them in the will, and by gosh, she was going to see a lawyer and she was going to break that will. And she went to see a lawyer and said, well, Mrs. Chandler, you can go right ahead and protest this will if you want to, but she said, I'm just giving you some fair advice. You'll have a hard time breaking that will. It may be handwritten, but it's legal. And he said that old gal knew what she was doing when she wrote that will. So you can go ahead and try to break that will if you want to, but good luck. So, anyway, she was a pretty shrewd person. Grandpa was the historian of the family, and we'd go down there, and he'd entertain you with stories of everything, the history. Well, to give you an example, in the Marlboro town history that was rewritten in something like 1974, the Wiswells had about three pages of history in it, and the Robinsons weren't even in there. So I kind of wonder what happened on the Robinson part of the family. Of course, they came out of Mount Vernon and Massachusetts and places like that. The only Mount Vernon history I ever saw, George Alfred or Grandpa Robinson was not even married then when that Mount Vernon history was put out. So you could go down there and Grandpa Wiswell would just sit in his own chair, and old chair out in the kitchen, and he'd talk and talk and talk. And he'd also take you for a ride in a one-horse buggy, and that had four wheels, but they were wooden wheels with iron rims, and had a little horse pulling it. I forget what your mother told me the name of that horse was, but I went out a number of times with him, looking at his properties and stuff like that, and he'd just keep talking and talking and talking. He was a great big old man. I bet you he weighed well over 200 pounds, and when he sat on that seat in that little buggy wagon, boy, the seat tipped towards his side, and we didn't like to sit on the same seat with him. There was a little tray or a little body in the back where you could sit, and we mostly rode in there. But your mother and I went out a number of times with him, and I can remember he had some property up on the old Chesham Road called the Kice Place. And we went up there one day and planted beside the road just before you got to the Kai's place, a whole bunch of evergreen trees. And boy, they ought to be pretty good sized trees up there by now, but I remember doing things like that with Grandpa Wizzle, but he sure could tell the stories, and there was a lot of history in his family. And but the thing I remember also about Grandma Riswell, Maggie Mullen, M-U-L-L-E-N, that's right, was that she took Alka-Seltzers, and I think she drank two or three of those a day with a tablet or two, because invariably you go down to her house and they'd sit a glass with the Alka-Seltzer bubbling in the glass. But must have been good for her, because she had a good clear mind until she died 84, 85 years old. She was still was pretty sharp mentally. Grandpa Wizzle had trouble with his eyes, and he was legally blind, and I didn't know it, but when his eyesight went bad, he took to drinking pretty good. But my dad told me at one time, well, he says, I go to the liquor store for Grandpa Wizzle, and he says, I get him a case of Paul Jones every week. I don't know how many bottles there were in there, but they were fifths of some kind of whiskey, Paul Jones. And Grandpa, he'd get Grandpa Wizzle one of those every Friday. So he didn't have much else to do but listen to the news. At, I think it was about 4:30 in the afternoon. You didn't want to go down there and try to visit with Grandpa Wizzle at 4:30 when Gabriel Heater was on, because he wanted to listen. And boy, he'd sit in that chair and hunch over that radio, listening to every detail, you know, of the news broadcast. Gabriel Heater, I think, was a forerunner of some of the newscasters that you might have known. He was one of the old timers, old Gabriel Heater, and Grandpa Wizzle liked his broadcast. Okay, I'm going to stop this thing again.